My name is Logan Quincy. I'm the co-chair of South Central Wisconsin Move to Amend, or SWMCA, and it is my distinguished pleasure today to introduce to you Mark Pan, Congressional District, a representative from Congressional District 2, and our representative, Move to Amend's best friend in Washington and here at home.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really glad to be here tonight with you. I'm just going to talk a little bit about the amendment because you all know about the amendment, and let's answer any questions I can try to answer for you about what's going on. As you know, this is a really interesting time to be in Washington. With the shutdown, first time in 17 years, the hyper-influence of the Tea Party. It's really nice to be back in Madison and not in Washington. Although there is one thing I think the Democrats and Republicans actually agree on right now is that at least we're not Toronto. So we thank Rob Ford for what he's doing. It makes us all look slightly better. But I'm really glad to try to at least answer any questions you have and talk about what we're trying to get done.
Don't forget Mary and Barry.
Mary and Barry. Right. Well, that's a few years back, though. We're living through Rob Ford. But two things let me kind of talk about. One, I just want to talk a little bit about another constitutional amendment, and then I'm going to come to this. And the reason I want to talk about both is I think there are two really important parts of what the bigger issue is, which is, really getting a hold of our democracy, right? Making sure that everyone has a vote, that it counts, and that we've got the influence of big money out of campaigns. I mean, for me, those issues work together really well. And there's actually two constitutional amendments, and I'm not going to keep doing constitutional amendments, although if you talk to John Nichols and Bob McChesney were in D.C., and Bernie Sanders and I appeared with them talking about their new book and about Move to Amend as well as the Right to Vote constitutional amendment. And, John will make a really strong case why constitutional amendments, especially now, are real important, given that legislation isn't moving, and this is a way to actually organize from the grassroots, which is exactly what we're doing with Move to Amend. So John can make a really strong case. But we've got two different ones that are kind of moving that I'm working with. The one I'm just going to talk about a very little bit is the Right to Vote, a constitutional amendment that Representative Keith Ellison and I are doing. And what's really interesting about that one is if you go to become a citizen, when you take that test to become a citizen, there's a question that says, what's the most important right you have as an American citizen? And the answer to that question is the right to vote. Yet, in our Constitution, there is no explicit right to vote. It's certainly implied. There are amendments that bar discrimination, but there's no explicit right to vote. If you think about it, when the Constitution was written, 20% of the people could actually vote. White, male, property owners over 21. So it was very, very limited. But with the problem that we're seeing, the tool that's being used in one front, in addition to the big money, is then instead of having people choose their elected officials, it's elected officials choosing their voters. And that's what we're seeing across the country. So I think right now there's over 80 laws proposed in something like 31 states that somehow take away that ability to vote, whether it's making it shorter, early voting, changing registration, photo ID laws, all the different things that we see that are out there. So the first constitutional amendment that Keith and I are working on specifically says that you have a right to vote in the Constitution. Why does it matter? Currently, if you live in one of these areas and one of these laws comes up, you have to prove that somehow it's inhibiting your right to vote. Rather than the opposite, if it was in the Constitution, it would be just the opposite. The state would have to prove that they're not inhibiting anyone's right to vote. So I think that in many ways I look at both of these as equally powerful in trying to regain our democracy. But I just want to talk about that one just that very briefly because we're working with Fair Vote on that. We're working with Color of Change. We just did a program with Push Rainbow. Jesse Jackson's group by my Rainbow Coalition. Thank you, because now it's like Push is what they lead with. We're working with them, and actually we're doing a follow-up call. So that one is on one arm that we're working on. The one that obviously people in this room, and I want to thank you for the efforts that you've all been doing on, because this truly is the grassroots-driven one, the one that we're trying to replicate some of those grassroots efforts on the other one, which is the Move to Amend. This is the one that Representative Rick Nolan from Minnesota also, for some reason, good folks in Minnesota, we're working with on these amendments, and myself are working on. And this is the one that you know. It basically says that a corporation is not a person, and that money is not free speech. And it's a very basic concept, but it would help us address the problems that we have with whether it be Citizens United or some of the other maneuvers that have brought in big, big money, and we're talking big, big money, into campaigns. And I think the beauty of the move to amend model is that we really are doing this from the grassroots. We're doing this by having ballot measures in communities across the country, and we're proving that the public wants it. And I think it's a different model than we've seen in some other cases with other, whether it be a bill or a constitutional amendment. But I think that's a really effective way for us to put that out there. Because then we can start saying, well, look, this community, and this community, and this state, and this area, and you have it across the country, you can prove that there really is this need to take care of it. Now, the complexity that probably happens a little bit in Congress around this issue is there are a number, I think it might even be up to 8, different amendments that somehow deal with Citizens United. I don't think any of them are as clean as the one that we proposed, working directly with Move to Amend, because the language is just as I said, a corporation is not a person, money is not free speech. That's pretty simple. Others have, you know, various other degrees of slight nuances to it. But this is what, you know, we'd really want to deal with. In this room, again, we know the problem with big money. We know the problem with Citizens United and that big money. We just saw the presidential election, what happened with all those outside groups coming in with absolute huge amounts of money. And for us to, again, regain our democracy, one, everyone has to have that ability to vote. And two, we have to make sure that we've got control of our campaigns and they're not somehow affected in too great a manner by outside dollars. So that's the constitutional amendment. Right now, there haven't been a tremendous amount of movement on it. But again, any issue you tell me, I would give you that exact same answer. In Congress, there isn't movement on anything right now. We don't have a farm bill. We don't have a budget. We barely had a continuing resolution. We only do those months at a time these days. So there are real structural problems, period, right now with Congress, specifically with the Tea Party. I mean, having 30 or 40 hardcore, only say no Tea Party people that brought us to really shutting down government. I could talk at length about that if you want to talk about it, if you have questions, but it was an interesting time to be there during this first shutdown in 17 years. But what that means is it's really hard to have anything of substance happen through Congress. You know, short of either flipping the majority or getting rid of, I think if you got rid of half of the Tea Party, you might be able to move on because then they can finally put them to the side and get back to trying to get things done. Because I do think there are some ways to talk to real conservatives about this issue and that we could really move it forward on. Tea Party people don't say yes to anything. The only word in their vocabulary is no, and that's why we've had the problems that we've had in the shutdown. So. That's all I really wanted to say. What I really want to do is take your questions and what I can try to answer in the time I've got. And again, I just want to tell you, I think the way we're doing this constitutional amendment is really key. The fact that we're rolling out these referendums, I can't tell you how valuable that is because as a tool we can show that it really does come from the grassroots up. We're really motivating the public who want us to do this. And that is the way I think ultimately we're going to be successful with these measures. So with that, I'd be more than glad to try to take any questions that you have.
You know that you're home for Thanksgiving, right? You don't have to wear that noose here.
I know, but you know, I appreciate that. Thank you. Unfortunately, I've had a whole day since 7:30 of nonstop stuff. So and a couple of them I had to wear it. So, but I appreciate you letting me be me, which would be the I don't think it's button, though. I don't know if I'll be there. I made it that far. Thank you. Yes?
Are you encountering any folks who are against the amendment on because we sincerely think there's a free speech issue? Remember that ACLU supported Citizens United. You encounter that with people who are genuinely, sincerely fearful of what we're doing?
You know, I think the biggest thing I see is because there were so many other measures already out there that have, you know, come back and reoccurred with people already behind them, it's somehow hard to explain the difference between, you know, an orange and a tangerine and, you know, things that look very similar but aren't quite the same, and trying to convince people why we think one way is better than another way to go with the constitutional amendment. I like the simplicity of the move to amend language that we've gone with. That's why I think it's the easiest way to go forward.
But, you know, even Bernie Sanders has got different language. And Bernie, I'm not going to complain about politically in any way possible. You know, we're fellow travelers. Just, I think it's just that people have a slightly different approach. And it's somehow, how do we then bring everyone back together on something that we can all agree on? The magic of the move to amend is, again, that we're going to getting this in votes so that we can point back, well, look at all these people now across the country that have said this is what they want to do. So I think ultimately we'll be able to, that'll help us move forward by having these referendums. But I haven't heard too many people say based on free speech, other than probably the ACLU, that it's an issue. And I think it's a growing issue. You know, don't forget, in my current class, I can tell you the last class in Congress, or the overall Congress, 47% of Congress are millionaires. In the Senate, I think it's like 70%. But overall, both houses, 47% are millionaires. I can't tell you my current class, my guess is it's gone up, because now some of the richest folks just came into my class also. And you know, when you look at things like that, not only is it the big outside money, but what happens is when you finance campaigns, you start getting more self-funded candidates. I look at who gets recruited in some of these races, and you know, I'm not saying they're not good candidates on their own, but you know, in New York, there's a candidate I think is a great candidate. I'd love to see win, Sean Eldridge, who's married to one of the Facebook founders. You know, you're going to have a lot more recruitments like that too when you have the campaign finance system we have, because it's very hard. At some point, if we don't change things 20 years from now, I don't know if someone like myself could run for Congress again, except for maybe in a district like this. But even here, someone will decide that money wins elections, and you can come in and invest a lot of money and potentially win an election. So we have to deal with it in some way. The problem is with this Congress, so little is going to move. I don't want anyone to think this is the year, but the grassroots efforts we're doing is what's going to make it successful. Yes?
You said there are ways to speak to conservatives about this. Could you clue us into some of those frames that you would use to talk to conservatives?
Sure. Well, I think just the fact that you don't have control of your elections anymore. You know, I think the classic election I remember in Wisconsin, where I think this resonated with some folks, on the Republican side, when there was the primary, I'm going to forget the third person in the primary, but it was Russ Darrow, Bob Welch from the state Senate, Russ Darrow, auto dealer, and someone else ran for the U.S. Senate nomination as a Republican. And Russ Darrow was able to put whatever money he needed into it. And someone like Bob Welch, who's worked his entire life, I may disagree with many of the policies that he advocated for, but he worked his entire life in the trenches in the Republican Party to someday hopefully run for a statewide office. And he got beat out by someone who came in with no experience, but a really big checkbook. And I think at some point you can talk to people, and they're going to see that more in races where some of these folks come in, where someone may have worked like you to the more traditional route of running for office, and yet there's a place where you stop. You know, we have to give Tammy Baldwin a lot of credit, because when she went through to run for office, I don't think most people would have the stomach for it. I don't know if I would have the stomach for it. To sit there and do 25 to 30 hours a week of calls, travel around the country to try to raise money. I mean, all the work that you have to do to actually raise the funds that are required because of a flawed finance system makes it harder to have someone who's a good candidate with good ideas. It's got to be someone who's got endurance and doesn't mind panhandling via phone and sucking up special interests all at the same time. Because that ultimately is kind of the package that, you know, it takes to be able to raise the money you need to. So, yeah, I think there are ways we can talk to folks about it and try to get people to realize we need to take our system back and that outside money. And actually, I forget the number, and I wish I would have remembered it, but after the Florida primary, something like 80% of the outside money that was spent on the Republican presidential primary came from under 100 people.
Yep.
And when you start, I don't remember the exact number, but it was damning. And when you look at that, I mean, again, reasonable people should look at that and go, this isn't, right, it's not a sustainable model.
This organization is very heavily attended by generations a little bit older than my own. So I was wondering, do you think that there's going to be, for students like myself, there's going to be opportunities to get this forward and to push this forward in a progressive ideological shift? Say New York City or not.
Sure.
Or do you think that politics has gotten so distasteful and kind of bipolar in a sense. It's so polarized in a sense that we don't go to fire the night just kind of at a loss. I feel like you want to score maybe even if it's not that long ago. So.
Yeah. Well, no, I think what you said, the second part you said is really super relevant in that, you know, the goal is they want, just like with all the photo ID laws and things, they want, the politicians want to choose their voters rather than voters choosing their elected officials, right? So we're trying to decide who's going to decide about us so we can control the process. So whether it be the photo ID laws or just how they run the operation, they want to make good-meaning people go, God, politics, what a stinky, why would I even get involved with that? Why would I? And they want to turn people off. So you're right. They want to make it so disgusting that people go, why would I get involved? And if they don't get you involved, you know, the younger community on a whole range of issues is out of sync with where the government's been. Marriage equality. Let me give you that good example. We finally are up to 58% of the people in the country now support marriage equality. Under 30 years old, 81% support marriage equality. So clearly, you know, I want to have, you know, folks who are going to be involved and hopefully running operation, you know, the world in the future making some of these decisions, they want to turn them on. They want to make sure they don't, because they will get people out in every fundamentalist church. They will get those voters out to make sure they vote how they want to. So one, we got to keep people engaged in doing it. But I know that, you know, with Kaya and others, you know, part of the where the energy is in getting these referendums going are a lot of younger folks are out doing the knocking and reaching out and talking to voters. There have been those efforts. I just think what's always important, and I think Tammy Baldwin was our best example, modern example of Wisconsin. You got to talk to people about issues they care about. Yep. And if we're not talking about, you know, issues that make it so that young people want to get involved and vote, then, you know, we're going to lose out on those votes. And I think the best example that I saw in my time in the legislature was in 2006 when the Republicans put the marriage amendment on the ballot. They clearly did it to try to get out conservative voters. They thought it was a brilliant strategy to bring out conservatives. In reality, they lost legislative seats. In fact, they lost 5 campus districts because students cared so much about equality and that issue that we picked up 5 seats. We flipped from Republican to Democrat. So when you talk about things that are relevant to people, they will get involved. And this issue has to be, because if you don't have control of how we finance elections and the outside money that comes in, you've lost control of your democracy. So you've got to make it relate the best you can to people and the issues they care about, whether it's the cost of higher education or financial aid. You've got to bring it back to something that's going to be real relevant. I think that's the best way on any issue, but especially an issue like this. Our democracy is all too important, but you have to make it relate to what people are living through. So, I can do one more, Dean? Okay, one more back, and then I got to wrap up. I do. Thank you. Yes?
I've been hearing some programs on Wisconsin Public Radio, which I'm grateful for that that exists, about the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yep.
And without getting too paranoid about it, it does seem to be secretive is one of the techniques that they seem to want to employ. My mind's going blank. The secretiveness of
the
it, and the power grab of it.
Yeah. So let me talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. People have a rough knowledge. Let me give you a drop more. So you know how a lot of the trade agreements, at least in my opinion, have been really bad trade agreements for U.S. Citizens, NAFTA being the original biggest of the bad that was out there. You know, it used to be the economy, you had the service sector, the manufacturing sector, then kind of your high-tech, biotech sector. You kind of lost a lot of that manufacturing sector because of jobs going overseas, because of bad trade deals, because there's no way you can bring some of these countries into the same standards if they don't have labor standards or environmental standards. You just really don't have fair trade at all. You may have what they call free trade, but it's certainly not fair trade. So we've lost a lot of jobs that have gone overseas because of other bad trade deals. The TPP, I think, involves 40, if I remember, something like 40% of the world's population is involved in this because it's the countries that are on the Pacific perimeter. And it is probably, since NAFTA, the biggest one that's come up. So we've had some individual country ones. But this one, of the 25 or so chapters, only a couple actually deal with trade, and the rest deal with a bunch of other issues that take away individual sovereignty, not only for us, but for other countries. Because it's a treaty, it's negotiated, we say it's secret, but it's because it's behind closed doors, but because they can't they say negotiate a treaty completely in public. So we don't really see what's in there. Now, we can, as members of Congress, see the language as they go through the process, and I did just that. First of all, I led the freshman letter, and I got 36 of my fellow Democrat freshmen to sign a letter saying we want more transparency. They've been much better about letting us now look at it, but I couldn't go into the staff member, and I couldn't write down anything in notes from them.
Oh, Jesus.
So I could go, and luckily, I had been pretty well-versed. I did have a little binder, so I was comparing, do you have this language? And I could actually go through and see stuff. What I can tell you, because that also is classified, so I can't tell you the specifics, but what I can tell you the general parts of it is, at best, it'll be where the last one left off. There's no better improvement than where we're going to be. And if you think about it, you got Vietnam involved. Vietnam has almost no labor standards. I don't believe they have a minimum wage. To try to bring them into a trade agreement, either you're going to really bring Vietnam up fast, which isn't going to happen, or you're going to have to kind of bring that common denominator down a little lower. And that's what I can see from language, again, is I think that we're going to have, in some areas, slightly different language, but not better language. And so you'll still have the potential that jobs will go overseas because of how they're set up. But also you're going to have the potential. I looked at the labor side, because I do a lot of labor stuff in Congress, and I did the procurement side. And the reason I looked at the procurement chapter, so two of the 25 chapters I looked at, was I had a bill when I was in the legislature, the American Jobs Act, which is a Buy American bill, essentially, that you could make sure your tax dollars stayed in the U.S. We, for a while, had a call center for food stamps that went to India. So you'd call for food stamps in Wisconsin, and you kind of got routed halfway around the world to get an answer. And we didn't think that made sense. We wanted to keep the dollars here. There are chapters, the procurement chapter could make it, someone could contest a Buy American or Buy Local law. So there are things like that that can directly affect not only our sovereignty, but our ability to have some of those preferences. So it's good reason to not necessarily be afraid of it, but be very aware of it. And then Congress normally would be able to, once we get the treaty, make changes. But there's a separate thing that happens. And I'm sorry I'm going long on this, but this is an issue I'm going to be working on a lot this year. So I've been the main person in Washington who deals with this is from Wisconsin, Lori Wallach, with Public Citizen. So I've had a lot of conversations on this. The real one that's in front of us right now is fast track. Because that would basically take away our ability to make many changes. You speed this monster up to the point that you don't really have any proper oversight that Congress should have with any kind of a treaty. That one, now the good news is we just had a letter on the Democratic side. We got 151 House Democrats out of 200 to sign a letter basically saying we oppose fast track. And the Republican side got, I think, 27 people. But what's important about that is, I never thought I'd be advocating for separate but equal, but our kind of strategy on this issue is separate but equal. Democrats are working Democrats. We're talking to some Republicans who are working Republicans. Because I'm not going to convince my friend Jim Jordan. But I might have Ben Jones, who is worthless on this issue, convince some Republicans why they don't want it for other reasons. So we're working together to try to, for sure, not have fast track happen and have a real debate about this. But there are plenty of reasons when you see the language, and again, I haven't seen the final, but I saw what areas we haven't worked out yet, that you're going to see some real problems on the environmental side, on the labor side, on the sovereignty side, that'll be real significant. So that's great. This is a partnership. Okay, Dane,
we're good.
I don't see a clock, so I don't know where I'm at. I didn't told her I was just going. But so let me just take one last question.
Could you tell us, Wisconsin citizens who really want a chance to vote on the move to amend the constitutional amendment in Wisconsin, with your insight into the state legislature, what strategies might you tell us that will get them to the tipping point beyond gathering every signature in the state?
Sure. I mean, Chris Chandler is taking the lead, I believe, if I know right, in the legislature, and she's a smart, great, capable person, so that's good. I think any kind of bill that's going to go through when you're dominated by Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican Governor, I think I just said the answer, right? You're going to have some Republican involvement in order to get them done. So one, I think you're going to have to reach out to some Republicans and convince them why it's important. And I think there is a case that, again, you can make to folks, but you have to find some of those allies to help sell the issue to their colleagues. But I would not count on and wait for the legislature to act on this. In the meantime, I would continue to do what you've done so well, which is go into these local communities and get it on local ballots. Because every time you do that, you know, suddenly you're in someone else's district and they just had another lopsided, overwhelming vote why they want to see this. I think those are really strong. And I wouldn't say that if you, you know, you want to do your efforts on a state level, but my guess is, given the makeup of this legislature, that's a pretty heavy lift. So instead, what you might want to do is keep working on those local communities. And what's going to be on the ballot this spring? Do we know what communities?
Lake Mills, got 10 of them.
Where else? Lake Mills, I heard?
I think
Wanakee, okay. And
there's a whole bunch of them, actually.
Okay, about 10 of them. Okay. Yeah. So I work those efforts because, again, you're building it from the grassroots up, but eventually you're going to get that critical mass. And you could, if you target some Republican districts and do this, then you can go to that rep going, look, if you're listening to your people, look what just happened. They all voted this way. That's another way to try it. But remember, nothing happens fast in government. I mean, federal government, oh, my God, I feel like, you know, an upside down tortoise compared to at least here. Which is like, but it's just a slow process. And when I passed compassionate care for rape victims, it took us four terms, took about 6 years, but it was a four-term period that we did it all. And we had to make a few slight adjustments to keep convincing people what it was and what it wasn't. But the real key was when we finally got, because I spent 12 of my 14 years with the Republican majority, don't forget, in the legislature, and we still got things done. I had to find a good Republican ally, and I did in Terry Musick. And we worked with the outside groups that did an amazing job on the issue. And when we found that ally, he was able to bring us, I think it was like 11 votes on their side, if I remember right, with almost every single Democratic vote, and we could pass it in the Republican legislature, a bill that made sure that you offered emergency contraceptives in every hospital in the state. You wouldn't have thought that was a likely thing to happen. It took a lot of time and a lot of work, but that's what this business is. You got to have that perseverance, and continuing to build those communities ultimately will bring us where we want to. So if you think you're not seeing me, there's a reason, because you're not seeing me, because unfortunately we're in Washington, sometimes not doing too much. But today was a very busy day. We're trying to get around, and we're looking forward to working with you on this and many other issues. And again, really appreciate you coming out tonight. So.
A couple of minutes before we let you go or let you have some food or whatever it is, hopefully there's still some back there, to just say that we are really, the Move to Mend, South Central Wisconsin Move to Mend, is really appreciative of all of the efforts that you've done in the federal Congress and just over the years fighting for an amendment to the Constitution, to make sure clear that corporations are not people and that speech, and for the right to vote, and just in general trying to have a more functional democracy. So just want to say thanks, and I think that I've always thought that you're very good at seeing the big picture and thinking holistically and getting to the root of the problem. And coupling that with the fact that you are willing to, not just willing to fight, but you really, really care about doing what's right, and you go out there and consistently fighting on the right side of issues. I'm glad to see you're still doing that, because I know that being in the federal Congress has got to be really hard to hold up with. But for a personal level, I really appreciate that. I know that other folks in South Central Wisconsin with Tremend really appreciate it. And we want to give you the certificate of appreciation we put together.
Thank you very much.
And I'll just read it so that everybody else can see what it says or hear what it says. It says, presented to Mark Buchanan, for your efforts to amend the U.S. Constitution to make clear that corporations do not have constitutional rights and that money is not speech, for your dedication to undoing the Supreme Court's disastrous Citizens United decision, and for bravely standing up to powerful moneyed interests in order to fight for true democracy in this country. And obviously a whole bunch of us signed it, about as many as could fit on there. And we've got a little cow on there too that says, woo, detail that Suzanne Burton is going to write. It's related, that's why I pointed out the cow.
Oh, nice.
This is an authentic move to a man, cow for your office. That we're all back here rooting for you and appreciating all of your help.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, I was supposed to just make one more announcement, sorry. I was asked to announce that for folks, don't just run off. If you would like to stick around and talk a bit more about what's going on here locally in Wisconsin with Move to Amend, or I don't know if Mark is going to take off or should stay. Okay, so anyway, but feel free to stay and help yourself to some food, and we'll have a little bit of a conversation. And thank you for coming.